I would like to thank our three speakers for sharing with us their thoughts and findings on a wide range of textual and visual materials from antiquity until the present day. I'm particularly interested in these presentations from the point of view of someone who is not an art historian or a Byzantinist. I'm in fact a classically trained philologist, and as Greg mentioned, I work on ancient Greek poetry. But someone who is very interested in the interactions between language, both fixed written texts and variant oral traditions, and the visual. My own research deals with representations of space, both small-scale landscape visualizations and large-scale geographical mappings, as well as the transitions between the two in the poetry of the 5th century BCE poet Pindar. But I'm more broadly interested in the same issues across different genres of epic, lyric, and tragedy. And we've already had a chance today to hear some fascinating papers on these topics. For this reason, I found it very productive to hear how our three speakers consider the textual and the visual, and most importantly, the interaction between the two in their own particular areas of specialty. In my response, I would like to focus primarily on the different approaches the three speakers took to considering the interface between texts and images. This difference is, I think, important and instructive, as it indicates the complexity of the problem and the various possible ways of addressing it. I will start in the reverse order from which we heard the speakers. Professor Lambraki Plaka presented us with a fascinating history of the status of the visual arts and their artists, especially in comparison and contrast with the more historically consistent place of honor that verbal arts have held throughout time. In her discussion, and the full discussion is up on the website, she has also brought us to the present day and the modern version of the same debate about the relationship between the literary and the visual, to which I would like to return at the end of my response. Professor Mallet has considered both literary and visual evidence, as well as performative contexts, which combine the two, from a range of genres and periods, emphasizing their role in reflecting, subverting, and ultimately constructing an image of the Byzantine society. And Professor Brubaker has focused on some productive tensions between words and images that purportedly deal with same reference, but ultimately diverge in their message, often through a complex process of intertextual and intervisual association. It is these different but not mutually exclusive perspectives on the question of the interaction of the word and image that I find particularly intriguing. And the way I see them, first, texts and images as the creators of culture rather than its perfect mirrors. Second, texts and images as creating different meanings, which may or may not be in conflict with each other. And finally, the accompanying difference in the perception and the status of the two media. With these issues in mind, I found particularly interesting Professor Mallet's observation that, and I quote again from the full version of the paper that's online, that the first function of culture in Byzantium was to represent the state to the outside world, to show Byzantium at its best to visiting ambassadors, mercenaries, and merchants. I wonder to what extent we might be justified in viewing images and possibly performances too as the privileged cultural medium in this process of representation. Greek was lingua franca, so to speak, of this region at the time, and presumably some, if not most, visitors would have been in a position to consider texts as well as images in formulating their own mental representations of the society. But the unlikelihood of the high level of literacy and the overwhelming visual orientation of Byzantium, to borrow Professor Brubaker's expression, makes me wonder if some of the images considered by Professor Mallet could be perceived more as externally oriented propaganda rather than, or perhaps in addition to, as cultural products aimed primarily at the members of the society itself and the various groups within it, and especially those groups that created them. And if so, could that distinction perhaps account for the apparent gap between texts and images that Professor Mallet observes, in particular in their representation of social groups, communities, and subsets of society? As she writes, Texts tend to show us less the divided groups than the detailed views of particular communities or specialist societies. And this in contrast to an earlier observation about the concern of images, on the other hand, to break down society into constituent parts. And the image of the Last Judgment at Torcello comes to mind, but several others as well. Of course, both media, texts, and images can potentially be used for internal or external communication, or both. But the nature of our evidence for this period may perhaps suggest a bigger divide between the two media than is initially apparent. After all, as Professor Brubaker notes in her paper, while most preserved texts were written by urban elite males, images have been preserved from all over the empire, from the humblest rural church to the imperial palace. I wonder then whether the three particular texts, considered in some depth by Professor Mullett, may be seen as rather internally oriented, that is, with a view of a particular audience in mind, an audience which would be especially sensitive to the subtleties of non-traditional and even subversive narrative structures and contents. Along similar lines, we might also consider the public versus private nature of the two main examples of art in dialogue with text that Professor Brubaker discussed, the miniatures in the Kudlov Psalter and the mosaics in the Church of Hagios Demetrios in Thessaloniki. The layered intertextual and intervisual connections at play in the miniatures are hardly matched by the initial divergence and ultimate convergence between the messages of the mosaics and the Miracula, the text of Miracula. The smaller the group of the initiated audience, so to speak, the more complex processes of visual and verbal encoding can be observed, I think. The multifaceted relationship between the two communicative and artistic media, verbal and visual, is of course by no means limited to the antiquity, as Professor Lambrati-Plaka's paper reminded us. Having claimed their rightful place alongside other liberal artists, painters and sculptors and performance artists today continue to incorporate, appropriate, reconfigure, and subvert words and texts. The examples are numerous, but the one that came to my mind as especially relevant for the question of the social status of the artist and the artistic product is the work of the 20th century conceptual artist Joseph Kossuth, who used in his work linguistic approach to explore the social, political, cultural, and economic contexts through which art is presented and defined. With images consisting solely of dictionary definitions of words, such as water, meaning, and idea, he displaced images and objects with intellectual provocation, bringing into question the preciousness of the unique art object and its privileged place in the society. In a sort of wonderful inversion of Plutarch's statement quoted by Professor Lambrati-Plaka about, we admire the work but scorn the artist, here the artist is the intellectual provocateur, and he's himself bringing into question the status of his own work of art. The fragmentation of today's visual and verbal media and the replacement of culturally shared mythological accounts and canonical religious texts with more personal mythologies, so to speak, of individual artists have by no means diminished the significance of the debate about the interaction between the verbal and visual arts. Thinking about, analyzing and discussing words about images and visual representations of textual narratives and themes is an invaluable exercise that makes for both more perceptive readers and more thoughtful observers of culture, ancient and modern alike.